Palestinian land between East al-Quds and the settlement of Ma'ale Adumim. The move has sparked widespread international condemnation. Numerous countries and human rights organizations have called the plan a violation of international law. The E1 plan is considered one of the most dangerous settlement projects in the occupied West Bank. Its goal is to encircle Palestinian towns east of the occupied al-Quds and prevent their expansion eastwards. It also aims to crush the possibility of al-Quds being the capital of any future Palestinian state by severing the northern and southern parts of the West Bank, effectively eliminating its geographic continuity. The E1 plan covers 1,200 hectares of confiscated Palestinian land and connects Ma'ale Adumim settlement to the occupied al-Quds. Staying with the occupied West Bank, five young Palestinians have been injured during an Israeli raid on a village near Ramallah. To hear more about the raid, we are now joined by our West Bank correspondent, Naka Hamed. Naka, very good to have you on the program. What can you tell us about these latest developments?
Yes, Bevan, well, the Israeli forces seems to have their efforts distributed all over the West Bank for the last 12 hours. The majority of the Palestinian cities have been raided with one major raid and a military operation towards Tul Kerem city. Let me start from there, as it is the main theater of events now. Just a little less than 1 hour, the Israeli forces announced that they have ended a 24-hour military operation towards Tul Kerem, where the entire city was put under a curfew, was put under total siege, a closing of all entrances and exits towards Tul Kerem. More than 1,000 Palestinians have been detained throughout the night, and this came after as a group punishment to what happened yesterday with a Palestinian resistance operation took place when the Palestinian resistance groups blew up a local made bomb to a military vehicle near the checkpoint 104 checkpoint near the city of Tul Kerem. And now the Israeli forces have announced that they will be ending this operation and withdrawing from Tul Kerem city after committing all of these actions on all of these measurements inside the city and making the life going back slowly towards Tul Kerem, with keeping the entrances and exits closed. Just they will be withdrawing from inside the city. Coming over here towards Ramallah, four young Palestinians have been shot with live ammunition after an Israeli settler attack towards the village of Deir Jarir to the northeast of Ramallah. Those four Palestinians were shot by the Israeli settlers and the Israeli forces as they were raiding the village. And this village had been under systematic attacks by the Israeli settlers, usually backed by the IOF and backed by the Israeli police in that area, because settlers are trying so hard to expand on the expense of the Palestinian lands and on the Palestinian villages, especially in the area of the northeast, the villages of Ramallah, Deir Jarir, Kubr Malik, Al Mughayyar, Tur Musayya, Abu Falah, all under the same attack, and all are facing the same atrocities. If we are to stay in northeast of Ramallah, the Israeli settlers have also attacked the village of Sinjar. This is a name that we are repeatedly talking about, because extremely dire situation is being created over there by the Israeli settlers, who are trying as much as they can to seize more Palestinian land. The village of Sinjar owned 40,000 dunams of land, and now it has been reduced towards 8,000 only. So we are talking about almost 70% of land loss in that area to the settlement expansion and to the settler violence over there. Throughout the night, also the Israeli forces have raided the village of Kufar Aqab to the south of Ramallah, between Ramallah and occupied Al-Quds, and the village of Kufar Ni'ma to the west of Ramallah, firing live ammunition and arresting many Palestinians. If we are also to take close to Ramallah, to the east of Ramallah, the Israeli forces started a wide range village of Bitin under the pretense that they were
Nakla, the connection is getting a little unstable. Let me get back to you in our later news bulletins. We're going to get back to the regular course of the news. That was Nakla Hamad joining us from Ramallah. Yemenis have once again held a mass rally in the northern city of Saada to reaffirm their solidarity with Palestinians and condemn the repeated Israeli attacks against their country. The demonstrators carried Yemeni and Palestinian flags and chanted slogans in condemnation of the Israeli crimes in Gaza, as well as the aggression against Yemen. They also expressed support for the Yemeni armed forces for their anti-Israeli operations. Yemenis have been holding pro-Palestine rallies almost every Friday since the beginning of the genocide in Gaza in October 2023. At a festival on Palestinian culture held in Rome, Italy's former Prime Minister Massimo D'Alema urged the EU to immediately suspend the bloc's cooperation agreement with Israel. Italy has said it is ready to consider sanctions on the regime as proposed by the European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen.
A new edition of the Palestine Festival, a five-day initiative focusing on Palestinian culture, has kicked off in the Italian capital, Rome. The festival, which is drawing large crowds, features Palestinian book, handcraft and culture. This year's edition includes talks and roundtables on a number of issues, including how the youth perceive the Palestinian plight and the complicity of Western countries in the Israeli regime's genocidal operations in Gaza and the West Bank. On Thursday, the festival was also joined by Italy's former Prime Minister Massimo D'Alema, who held an interview on the ongoing dramatic situation in the occupied territories and grave violations of international norms carried out by Israel.
It seems to me that finally, albeit with far too much delay, we are starting to understand we are facing an intolerable situation in the Palestinian territories. Nonetheless, nothing is done to stop it. Palestinians have the right to self-defense when somebody breaks into your house and kills you.
Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani said on Thursday that the Italian government is ready to consider sanctions on Israel proposed by European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen in her State of the Union speech. The bloc is set to adopt a tougher stance on the regime, including imposing sanctions on extremist ministers and violent settlers, and suspending bilateral payments to the Tel Aviv regime over the unfolding humanitarian crisis in Gaza. More than 300 former European diplomats and officials have written to European Union leaders urging a far more decisive response to Israel's onslaught in the occupied territories. Unlike some European countries, however, the Italian Foreign Minister Tajani has once again stated that Rome is not ready to recognize the state of Palestine yet. Max Civili, Rome.
Iran has issued a serious warning to the European parties to the 2015 nuclear deal known as the JCPOA. Foreign Minister Abbas Araghchi says any activation of the deal's so-called snapback mechanism would automatically nullify Iran's recent agreement with the UN nuclear watchdog to resume inspections of Iranian nuclear sites.
Action is taken against the Islamic Republic of Iran, including activation of the snapback mechanism. If, despite all the disputes at the Security Council, the snapback is ultimately triggered, then from our perspective, this agreement will no longer hold any legitimacy.
Araghchi was referring to the 2015 agreement's dispute resolution clause that allows for reimposition of UN sanctions on Iran. European parties to the deal triggered the mechanism last month. Araghchi said Iran, along with Russia and China, believes that Europe has no legal basis to activate the mechanism. He said Iran's recent agreement with the IAEA on a new cooperation framework has nothing to do with the snapback mechanism. Araghchi added that under the deal, the IAEA cannot carry out inspections or access Iran's enriched uranium stockpiles until the country's security concerns are fully addressed. He said granting such access requires authorization of the Supreme National Security Council on a case-by-case basis. The Iranian foreign minister says Tehran is close to reach a deal with Paris that will release Iranian female academic Mathias Fangieri, who's held in a prison in France. Abbas Arshi said a lot of activities have been done in this regard, adding that Esfandiari's release in exchange for French prisoners in Iran is now approaching its final stages. The top Iranian diplomat didn't give a time frame for the exchange, saying Iran's judiciary and security institutions are also involved in the process. He added that there will be final coordination for implementation of the deal between Tehran and Paris. Esfandiari has been held in a detention facility in Paris suburbs since late February. She was arrested over publishing a message condemning the genocide in Gaza. Esfandiari is a linguist and French language graduate who has lived in France for the past 8 years. The UN Security Council has condemned Israel's deadly airstrikes on the Qatari capital Doha, which were aimed at assassinating senior Hamas officials. Qatar's delegation, led by its prime minister, denounced Israel's aggression as an attempt to derail Gaza's ceasefire mediation efforts.
The attack is a violation of the sovereignty of a state member of the United Nations. This attack is far away of the civilized behavior by states that believe in peace. Qatar is making tireless efforts to save lives, and this attack puts the international community before a test. Israel, led by extremists, bloodthirsty extremists, have gone beyond any borders.
During the Wednesday meeting, Sheikh Mohammed Al Thani accused Israel of recklessly undermining regional stability and attempting to sabotage any prospects for peace. He stressed that Doha will continue its humanitarian diplomatic efforts to spare bloodshed, warning that it will not tolerate further violations of its security and sovereignty. He added that the Security Council bears a historic responsibility now, cautioning that silence in the face of Israeli crimes will erode its credibility. Russia and China likewise addressed the meeting, condemning the strikes on Qatar and voicing concern that such actions could trigger a new wave of regional escalation.
The Russian Federation condemns in no uncertain terms the attack carried out by Israel on 9 September, targeting a residential compound in Doha. It is clear that this Israeli attack will have grave consequences, both for the already atrocious situation and Gaza, and for the security of the vast region of the Middle East.
Israel launched an attack on Doha, the capital of Qatar, in flagrant violation of Qatar's territorial sovereignty and national security, international law and the UN Charter, and efforts to achieve peace. China resolutely opposes this and strongly condemns such an act.
Both Russian and Chinese delegations criticized the impunity granted to Israel by the West, particularly the U.S. Russia's ambassador Vasily Nebenzia said the Israeli strikes targeted not only the state of Qatar, but also the mediators working towards a diplomatic solution to the Gaza war. He urged Israel to halt what he called reckless acts of aggression that fuel regional violence. China's Fu Kong likewise condemned Israel's Doha strikes as irresponsible and a deliberate attempt to sabotage Gaza ceasefire negotiations, which can heighten tensions in the region. Fu called on Israel to cease hostilities and return to the negotiating table. Iran's permanent representative to the UN also firmly condemned the recent Israeli strike against Qatar, warning that inaction by the world body will lead to further aggression by Tel Aviv.
The criminal Israeli prime minister has openly threatened the countries in the region with attacks and has explicitly declared wherever Hamas political leaders are present, the regime will attack them. If the United Nations Security Council does not take actions today, another country will inevitably be added to the list of the Israeli regime's aggression, and the regime will once again commit aggressive acts with complete impunity.
The Iranian envoy urged the UN to adopt a binding resolution to hold the Israeli regime fully accountable for its violation of the Qatari sovereignty. He said Tehran supports Qatar's right to self-defense based on international law and the UN Charter. He underlined that Doha reserves the right to take political, diplomatic, and legal measures to protect Qatari citizens' sovereignty and territorial integrity. The emergency meeting of the Security Council came less than a week after the Israeli regime launched an organized assassination attack against Hamas officials in the Qatari capital, Doha. The attack left 6 fatalities, but failed to kill the senior officials of the Palestinian Resistance Movement. And that is a wrap for this hour's news bulletin. Thank you so much for staying with us.
today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. In the name of Allah, salam, and welcome to a new episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. Thank you very much for choosing this program to listen to, which is concerned about importance of unity in Islam.
Every sound and every voice in every language ever heard. Each drop of ink that has been used to write every single word. They could never portray everything I feel in my heart and wanna say. And it's hard to explain why I could never describe my love for you.
You are listening to today's special from IRIB English Radio on Friday, 19th of Rabiul Awal, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 21st of Shahrivar, 1404 of the Islamic Solar Hijri calendar, and the 12th of September, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. We open Allah's book and we bless this moment by listening of chapter and fall, verse 63. We come back to the studio and we learn about this verse more.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Wa alafa bayna qulubihim. Law anfaqta ma fil ardi jami'an ma. بين قلوبهم ولكن الله ألف بينهم إنه عزيز حكيم.
And brought together their hearts. If you had spent all that is in the earth, you could not have brought their hearts together. But Allah brought them together. Indeed, He is exalted in might and wise.
لا إله إلا الله لا إله إلا الله.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him and his family, is the Prophet of Islam, strove against social prejudices. According to the Prophet of Islam, trampling the rights of others described peace and security, resulting in hatred and discord. Even in the statements of his last days, the Prophet warned the Ummah against discord, saying, O people, your blood and properties are forbidden for each other. Beware that every Muslim is the brother of another Muslim, and Muslims are brethren to each other. Focus on the importance of unity in Islam, we find that Prophet Muhammad was sent by Allah with the universal message of Islam as the messenger of mercy, whose mission was foretold by all previous prophets over the different parts of the world. He preached brotherhood of humanity. Although born in Arabia, he never said the Arabs had any preference over the non-Arabs. Among his companions were Salman the Persian, Suhaib the Roman, and Bilal the Black Abyssinian. Once on the commandment of Allah, he conducted peace of brotherhood among his companions, selecting a pair of those who were friends of each other. After pairing some 740 companions, the Prophet then held the hand of Imam Ali and declared him his brother.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam, Muhammad, and his purified progeny. Today we are going to talk about the Holy Prophet of Islam's efforts towards Islamic unity or Muslim Ummah unity. The life of the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alayhi wa sallam, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon him and his household, is not only a source of spiritual inspiration for billions of Muslims worldwide, but also a profound lesson in leadership, unity, and the quest for eradicating divisions among his followers. Throughout his prophetic mission, the Holy Prophet ﷺ worked tirelessly to unite the diverse tribes and communities of Arabia under the banner of Islam, emphasizing the importance of unity among Muslims. Before the advent of Islam, Arabian Peninsula was a land marked by tribalism, constant warfare, and deep-seated divisions. Various tribal factions competed for power and resources, often resorting to violence to settle disputes. This atmosphere of chaos and discord made unity seem like an unattainable dream. So what was the message of Islam then? In the midst of this turbulent environment, the Holy Prophet, Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam, received the divine revelation of Islam. The message of Islam called for monotheism, social justice, and equality among all believers, regardless of their tribal or social backgrounds. It was a message of unity in faith and purpose.
IRIB English Radio presents today's special, Every Day for 15 Minutes.
Be like the sun, shining with light, be like a rose, spreading its fragrance.
Today's special.
Be like the earth, humble and wise. Be like the rain, pouring all your love to every soul.
This is today's special, which introduces one way we can do to develop a culture of Muslim unity. So be with it. Making dua for unity. Ask our Imam to emphasize unity as an Islamic duty in his khutbahs and suggest practical ways it can be achieved in your country and Islamic organizations. Also suggest to Muslims to make a special dua for Muslim unity. When the Hajis return from the pilgrimage, the Prophet has encouraged us to go forward for receive them, and when we receive them, to request them for dua as well. This is another opportunity to seek duas for Muslim unity. And finally, make sure that you as an individual are not only working for unity, but making dua for it as well, since results are all in Allah's hands.
حبيبي جد الحسن رسولي معدن الجود إمام الحرام نبينا خير من يمشي على قدمي يا عاشقين صلوا على سيد الكون سيد الكون. صلى الله عليه وآله. آه يا نبي.
Unity teaches us to be selfless. None of you will have faith until he loves for his brother what he loves for himself. Quite beautiful. This narration includes both Muslims and non-Muslims in relation to maintaining brotherhood. Our Prophet is directing us about how a believer should invite a non-believer to Islam, just how he loves Islam for himself. For this reason, it is recommended to supplicate for the disbeliever to be guided. The meaning of love here is an intention for good and benefit, and this meaning is religious love, not human love. This type of love is therefore quite unique, just like how you may invite a friend to your home due to wanting their presence and to host them to the best of your abilities. Inviting them to Islam with the same mentality is an example of exposing love to someone due to wanting good for them. This is the essence of unity, bringing together people from all walks of life and making them bond through love and respect.
Sheikh Rouhani.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In this episode, actually, we are going to talk about the role of Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and the 14 infallibles, I mean the A'imma alayhim salatu wassalam, in establishing wahda and unity among Muslim ummah. Wahda and unity was important for the Imams, but at the same time, they were spreading the true teachings of Islam. They were teaching Muslims the true message of Islam. They were trying to their best to convey, to deliver the true teachings and doctrines of Islam to the Muslim Ummah. But at the same time, they tried to preserve the unity among Muslims. So preserving unity does not mean to forget about the true teachings of Islam. To, for example, forget about the true doctrines of Islam. No, it doesn't mean that. For example, Imam Sadiq alayhi salatu wasalam, Imam Ja'far al-Sadiq, Imam Muhammad al-Baqir, Imam Rida alayhi salatu wasalam. This imma taught a lot, the Muslim imma, the true teachings of Islam. But at the same time, they were trying their best to preserve the unity among Muslims. So sometimes we might misunderstand the unity, that if you want to preserve unity, we should forget about the true teachings and doctrines of Islam. No, it doesn't mean that. We can keep united. You can be a united ummah, but at the same time, we must be in search of true teachings and doctrines of Islam. This is what we should understand from the life of the Holy Prophet Sallallahu Alaihi Wasallam and the lives of the infallibles. That unity among Muslim Ummah was one of their main objectives and purposes of their lives, of Islam, of the Quran. So that's why we must be very much cautious and aware about this important objective and purpose of our religion, Islam. وآخر دعوانا أن الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين.
صلوا عليه شافي الأمة في ذكر الرسول تشحذ الهمة يا ربي بجاه النبي أزك الغمة يا ربي بجاه النبي أزك الغمة.
Nice topic, nice discussion. So inshallah we continue this topic. Thank you for choosing this program to listen to, but our time is up now. Just one sentence. We leave you in Allah's protection. Fi amanillah.
Mustafa, anta nabiyul amin wa sayyidul mursalin rahmatan lil alamin jitta bil haqqi yaqin anta nabiyul amin.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. IRIB English Radio. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en.
It is one of the most vibrant cities in Iran. For centuries, Qazvin, also known in history as Caspian, has been a melting pot of people and cultures, and also one of the important hubs for trade and commerce in the region due to its special situation on a part of the Silk Road, where merchants brought in commodities from the four corners of the world. And there was a special place for that purpose, a building which is still alive until today.
The Sadr Sultanate Caravanserai was one of the greatest icons of Qazvin city before it was partly abandoned near the end of the Qajar dynasty. But today the caravanserai is back on its feet once again, thanks to restoration efforts by the municipality. Covering an area of around 35,000 square meters in the heart of the city, Sadr Sultanate is visited by thousands of people, including tourists, every day. In the early afternoon, just prior to rush hour, a gentle breeze accompanying the tranquil atmosphere becomes the main theme in long passages inside the caravanserai. The combination of bricks, tiles, and wood by dexterous Iranian architects have created breathtaking perspectives and perfect symmetries all across the building. Just close your eyes and imagine the camel bells ringing as they bring in goods from China, India, and Europe to Iran.
Here, the biggest roof caravanserai in the entire Middle East continues to win the admiration of its visitors. Looking at the arcs and the domes covering each corridor, you could feel yourself standing inside a genuine Iranian bazaar.
Sadr Sultanate Caravanserai is a hangout for art lovers more than anything else. A Persian calligraphy class teaches the artistic way of writing to kids. In another corner, courses in wood carving are offered to enthusiasts by the famous master Said Farhadian, who turns wood into magic. In one of the shops, handmade leather products and equestrian gear are offered to clients. Qazvin's antique mats and felt products are also available. If you're after handicrafts, medicinal herbs, and sweet souvenirs, this is the right place to be. Here you can also experience a perfect traditional restaurant and a peaceful Iranian tea house as well. Most of these shops are open since the renovation of the caravanserai a few years ago. However, there are also old-timers who've spent a lifetime here.
More than a century ago, architects used all in their power to build this caravanserai as attractive as possible for merchants who arrived here to rest, to trade, and also to transit their goods. Today, the same amount of accuracy has been put into restoring the building so that Sadr Sultanate could continue to attract people.
Harmony is everywhere, from the floor to the ceiling. New brass wall sconces add additional warmth and depth to the caravanserai's interior. A visit to this historical place can keep you entertained for a whole day and create unforgettable moments for everyone. The Sado Sultanate Caravanserai is another page in the colorful book of Iran, with memories that could remain in your mind forever. Life is short. Don't forget to visit this beautiful place. Amir Mehdi Kazemi for Iran.
Persian handicraft is steeped in history and a big part of Persian tradition and culture that has always remained alongside its people even till this day. Persian handicraft has offered countless forms of eye-catching crafts that have left any visitor to this ancient land baffled and bedazzled.
Now, when you come to Tehran's handicraft hub, you're met with amazing artwork and also handicraft work, and you have so much to choose. The interesting thing is that everything here is made out of wood, and I would really love to see how this was made.
Marquetry, which is a form of wood inlay. It is the art and craft of bringing pieces of veneer together to a structure or surface to form decorative patterns, designs, or even portraits, an art many Iranian craftsmen have learned to master.
They're all made out of wood, and they're from different colors of wood, and trust me, it has taken hours, even months, for an artist to sit down and bring all these little pieces together and make it what it is right now, a wonderful piece of art, and it's this art that we call marquetry.
In order to bring together an array of colorful veneer into detailed and delicate shapes and sizes, and produce an astonishing and intricate masterpiece requires determination, hard work, an artistic vision, and lots of skill. Years of practice is a must to master marquetry.
I know that this is quite impressive and very amazing in every way, but it's not just wood inlay that's amazing as well. There's other kinds of inlay artwork. There's also stone inlay and also metal inlay.
However, the craftsmen have not restricted themselves to just using wood or just the technique of marquetry itself. After all, it is a competitive market with customers always wanting high standards and unique works of art.
Now, the art of inlay isn't just about working with wood. You can also use different kinds of materials, and it really depends on the artist or the craftsman and what materials they want to use. They could use, well, different kinds of metals or even different kinds of stone, like a turquoise or maybe mosaic. It really depends on the artist and what kind of result they want to produce with it.
Nowadays, craftsmen include other materials, such as turquoise, and different techniques of inlay, such as intarsia, into their works. And sometimes, it is this combination and mixture of different elements that give it a one-of-a-kind finish. So you've seen what masters of marquetry are capable of, and it doesn't stop there. Talented artists of this caliber are seen in all areas of Persian handicraft. And if you don't believe me, then come and see for yourself.
Nowadays, craftsmen and artists, they use different kinds of techniques and different kinds of inlay to produce wonderful works of art. I hope you enjoyed it, because I did. I'll see you next time. Reza Golzadeh for you.
Just know it, 'cause you're the one. It ain't a selfish love when I'm with you. Remind me of the moment so I know it's true. I'll just say it. You are the one. Won't you be my BFF forever? Won't you be my partner after this world? We'll see. We believe it together. The dreams are meant to be, 'cause you're the one for me. I never thought that I would ever feel this way. I ask a Lord to bless you every single day. I'll just say it, 'cause you're the one. And when times are tough, we've got the world to see. Standing right beside you's where I wanna be. I just know it. You are the one. Won't you be? About this just over a million times. Who had ever thought that I could call you mine? I just know it, 'cause you're the one. And when there's gray in our hair and we've not much to do, I wanna spend the rest of my days with you. Oh, don't you know it? You are the one. Oh, won't you be the one?
Good evening to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio from Tehran. Nice to have you with us. I'm your presenter for the next hour. Here are some interesting facts about Islam. Muslim scholar Ibn al-Haytham, known as Al-Hazen in Europe, who was born in 965 AD, formulated the scientific method and has been referred to as the world's first true scientist. He is also often regarded as the first theoretical physicist, making a significant contribution to the theory of light and optics. Additionally, he developed what is called celestial mechanics, which led to the eventual work of Europeans such as Copernicus, Galileo, Johannes Kepler, and Isaac Newton. We start off this hour's programs with Hadith of the Day. The program presents a hadith from the Holy Prophet and members of his household, Ahlul Bayt, peace be upon them, along with a brief explanation and commentary on the hadith. Then it's time for our radio productions feature. After that, we have leader's speech, presenting an English translation of a selection of the statements and speeches of the honorable leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Khamenei. And we round up this hour's programs with Spotlight, a program which covers the most important events happening in the world today. Stay with us.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy.
mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You are listening to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Dear brother, dear sister, salam, and welcome to this episode of the Hadith of the Day. Today we reflect on a saying from the heart of Karbala, from the master of martyrs, Imam Hussein, peace be upon him. Whoever sheds a single tear for us, Allah the Exalted will grant them paradise. How can a single drop of grief carry the weight of paradise? Let's explore the soul behind the tear. This isn't just any tear. This is a tear born of love, of loyalty, of connection to truth and pain. A tear shed over the suffering of Imam Hussein alayhi salam and his family, the Ahlul Bayt alayhim salam in general. It could be from remembering the thirst of the children in Karbala, the courage of Lady Zainab salam Allah alayha, the last stand of Abu al-Fadl Al-Abbas alayhi salam. It could be from realizing the depth of oppression they endured and the purity with which they bore it. Such a tear is not water. It is testimony. It says, I was not there, but my heart still bleeds. I wish I was there with you and I could shed my blood for you. Modern science confirms tears shed for emotional reasons, especially compassion or grief, trigger a chemical release of stress, stress relief hormones like oxytocin and other hormones or substances. That's why people often feel lighter or calmer after crying. But this isn't just biology. In Islamic spirituality, crying for the Ahlul Bayt, for divine purposes, for divine kind of stuff, is an act of love. And love for them is a sign of faith. Imam Baqir alayhi salam said, our Shia are those whose hearts burn when we are mentioned. Tears are how the soul speaks when words fail. A child hears the story of Ali Akbar alayhi salam and cries, not because he fully understands martyrdom, but because his fitra, his pure nature, reacts to injustice. And he loves the beauty of the character of Ali Akbar, about whom Imam Hussein alayhi salam says, I'm sending to the battlefield the one who is, who resembles the Holy Prophet the most. Or a grandmother whispers Ya Hussein and tears fall. She's remembered her son who died young and how Karbala gave her patience. A young woman distant from religion hears Zainab's sermon in the court of Yazid and a tear escapes. That tear becomes a turning point. So even if you've strayed, even if your heart feels hard, one sincere tear for Imam Hussein alayhi salam is enough to reconnect, inshallah. So this tear is our allegiance, our loyalty to Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and that would mean a lot. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
You just listened to the program Hadith of the Day on Iran Radio with Sheikh Danish.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad.
محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Extreme thin bodies, dehydration, deliberate starvation, being killed under interrogation, attacks, sexual abuse, and other violations. Don't get me wrong, I'm not talking about some medieval rituals. I'm talking about the situation of the Palestinian prisoners living inside Israeli jails. Since October the 7th, more than 17,000 Palestinians have been detained inside Israeli prisons. Now, more than 10,800 of them are still being detained, many of them under the pretense of administrative detention, without any accusation, without any fair trial. Today I will be discussing these topics and shedding more light about the situation of the Palestinian prisoners inside Israeli jails with both of my guests, Ms. Fadia Al-Barghouthi, a freed prisoner and activist, and Mr. Issam Al-Arouri from the Jerusalem Legal Aid Center. Welcome to this show.
Hi, welcome.
Mr. Issam, let me start with you about reading the situation inside Israeli jails. What can you tell us about the situation inside the Israeli jails and detention camps?
To talk about what's happening in Israeli jails, we need also to talk about what's happening in Gaza, in the West Bank, in Jerusalem, all the situation. For the first time since occupation, more and more, we are not only dealing with an occupying force, we are dealing with a gang. Israel is becoming a gang. And that's reflected in all Israeli practices all over occupied territory. With our show today about prisoners, Israel changed everything related to prisoner situations since, it's not actually since the 7th of October, it was before the 7th of October, with a new Israeli government, the ultra-right fanatic government with Ben Gvir being responsible for internal security and the police and insisted to be responsible for the prison management, he started to change the situation inside Israeli jails. Historically, Israel is violating international law by bringing Palestinian prisoners inside Israel. This is forbidden by the international law, forbidden by the Geneva Conventions. It's not allowed to transfer the occupied people to the occupied to the occupiers' land. Israel double punishes Palestinians by bringing them to Israel, preventing their families from visiting. That was long before the 7th of October, because visits needs special permits, which you might get or might not get. And now, as Israel is engineering starvation in Gaza, it is engineering starvation and hunger in prisons. With all the affidavits that we are collecting from released prisoners, not only this, but also in the last 2 years, the highest number of Palestinians were killed under interrogation and under Israeli violence.
Yes.
And they are triple also punished, first by their arrest illegally, by interrogating them and practicing extreme violence against them and beating them to death, and by now they are detaining 73 bodies of Palestinian prisoners who were killed in prison. And now it is not a punishment for the body, it is a punishment for the families, for the society, part of collective punishment. No, there is no single violation, no single international crime, no single crime against humanity